and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories we are covering in Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, April 26, 2023. President Salva Kiir calls for the extension of the U.S. brokered ceasefire due to expire at midnight Wednesday.
The President Salva is urging that this humanitarian ceasefire is very important. The ceasefire negotiated by Saudi Arabia and the United States, it was only for 72 hours. And President Salva is asking that this ceasefire must be extended.
And Sudanese ambassador to Washington says his government is committed to a political process to return the country to a civilian government.
As far as the update I received from my government in Sudan and from a number of eyewitnesses on the ground there in Sudan, the ceasefire is holding.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir is calling on the warring parties in Sudan's conflict to extend the current ceasefire for another 3 days across the country. The minister in the office of the president, Barnaba Marial Benjamin, says the temporary U.S. brokered ceasefire has collapsed, adding President Salva Kiir has been constantly engaging the two parties to broker another ceasefire. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Addressing reporters in Juba at the office of President on Wednesday, Barnaba Marial Benjamin says President Salva Kiir has requested the warring parties in Sudan for an additional 72-hour ceasefire to enable residents of cities affected by the conflict access services.
The President Salva is urging that this humanitarian ceasefire is very important. The ceasefire negotiated by Saudi Arabia and United States, it was only for 72 hours, and President Salva is asking that this ceasefire must be extended so that people can get food and water and so that hospitals can open, so that doctors and nurses can go to hospitals and all this.
This week's Biden administration brokered 72-hour ceasefire agreement between the warring parties is due to expire at midnight on Wednesday. Marial says the warring parties in Sudan have done very little in observing the 72-hour ceasefire agreement. Deng Dao Ding, South Sudan's acting foreign affairs minister, says South Sudan is leading efforts to bring the fighting in Sudan to an end. He says President Salva Kiir has been in touch with General Abdel Fattah el-Burhan.
His Excellency the President have talked to His Excellency Burhan yesterday, and he spoke to him this morning to reinforce his message of supporting the existing ceasefire, but His Excellency the President have requested an additional ceasefire of 3 days that should commence from 28th of April to 28th. And His Excellency the President have talked to Burhan, and Burhan have accepted.
Deng says South Sudan is leading with influx of South Sudanese national and refugees seeking safety in South Sudan.
South Sudan have received so far international nationalities, members from international, from neighboring border countries and other places. Kenya have picked their nationals about 24, 2 days ago. The Somalis are over 100 at the border. The Eritreans are 250. We have Ugandans, we have Indians, we have other nationalities. They have a lot of issues, including they have run without even passport, without even ID.
South Sudan's Minister of Information, Michael McQuay, says Sudan's conflict has affected his country's economy.
The South Sudanese who have been there are now coming back to South Sudan. The refugees, the other nationals who are in Sudan are now entering South Sudan. These are entering as refugees. And all these have ultimately real effects on us, especially at a time when our economy is not that good, then definitely this will add more to our problems. Bearing in mind that most of our economy depends on depends on our stability in the Sudan.
The country's Minister for Humanitarian Affairs, Albino Akol, who also spoke during Wednesday's press conference, says his ministry has identified 12 entry points for the Sudanese refugees and South Sudanese nationals fleeing the conflict in Sudan.
The ministry has now deployed a personnel in these 12 entry points. Each entry point is 12 people. We use senior people from headquarters here, and then we take from the nearby areas another 9 people.
Akol says 500 people are registered every day at each of the 12 entry points across the country. He says his ministry is busy settling Sudanese refugees and South Sudanese nationals who are fleeing the conflict in Sudan. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer in Juba.
Sudan's ambassador to the United States, Mohamed Abdallah Idris, says his government is committed to a political process to return the country to civilian-led government. Idris was appointed to the post after a 2021 military takeover, which ended a transitional civilian administration. He tells VOA's Nabil Biagio as soon as the current conflict between Sudan armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces ends, negotiations to restore democratic transition under a December 2022 agreement will resume. He says the government of General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who heads Sudan's sovereign council, enjoys full legitimacy, adding that a recent U.S. brokered ceasefire between his forces and the rapid support forces seems to be holding.
As far as the update I received from my government in Sudan and from a number of eyewitnesses on the ground there in Sudan, the ceasefire is holding, and we hope that will continue. It is good for the civilians, and it is good for the for the country, and it is good also for the management of the total situation.
How do you see the current conflict in Sudan impacting U.S.-Sudanese bilateral relations?
It will not impact, but it will strengthen and enhance the engagement between the Sudanese government and between the American government, between the official institutions in the two countries, hoping that our joint efforts will lead things move forward together with the other efforts, regional and international efforts. I think that what is happening will enhance the engagement and exchanging of views, updating us, we also update them, and we see where we can manage and move forward.
I see. Sudan's now warring parties, the army and the rapid support forces, were part of a process to restore a civilian-led government following a military takeover in 2021 that ended the civilian administration of Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. Some analysts say there is a crisis of legitimacy in Sudan. How do you respond to that?
You know, that is the Sudanese people are the one who can say whether there is this this party is legitimate or this party is not legitimate. The legitimacy is given by the Sudanese people to any governing body in the country. As we are speaking now, and as of October 25th, you indicated too, there is a government, there is supreme Council of Supremacy, and there is a civil government also, caretaking government, which is handling the this political, handling the administrative issues in the Sudan. So the issues of legitimacy is a 100% Sudanese issue. No other can other person or other country can say that this is legitimate or this is not legitimate. The Sudanese people are there on the ground, and they are supporting the government.
Just finally, to put this issue of legitimacy to rest, you were appointed by the government that came after the 2021 military takeover. Some people call it a military coup. That civilian administration that was ended appointed an ambassador in 2020, but he was forced to resign. Now you are a full ambassador representing Sudan. How do you see your current role?
The current role is the role of any ambassador is to try to improve the Sudanese-American relations, to try to work with the American our American partners for the benefits and the interests of both sides, the Sudan and the United States of America. As you know, when I came here, I presented. I was appointed in March 2000 last year, 2022. And I came here in the first of September, and on the 16th of the same month, I presented my credentials to His Excellency President Joe Biden. And as from that date, I'm here active in contacts with the different levels of the government here in Washington and in the United States of America.
And finally, how does your government plan to complete the process of restoring Sudan's democratic transition and the return to a civilian-led administration, which the military agreed to before the current outbreak of violence?
You are right, and this is a good question. You know, the chairman of the Supremacy Council and all other parties also in the Sudan, they all confirmed and reiterated that they are committed to the political process as soon as this crisis is managed. So they will go back and resume the political process. And that is a commitment given to the Sudanese people, to our partners, whether they are international or regional. And it is an open and a public statement that the government is 100% committed to the resumption of the political process, and let us hope that the crisis pass and then we go back to the political process.
That's Sudan's ambassador to the United States, Mohammed Abdallah Idris. He was speaking with VOA's Nabil Biagio in Washington this past hour. Sudan's former ambassador to the United States, Nureddin Sati, who served as Khartoum's envoy to Washington, D.C. from 2020 to 2022, says the temporary ceasefire is holding, but there are reports of sporadic gunfire across the country. Ambassador Sati says there is the need for international pressure on the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces to end the fighting and talk peace. Sati says the conflict in Sudan could spiral out of control with more actors joining the two groups for their national interests.
People are fleeing all over the place, leaving Khartoum. The two belligerents are systematically destroying the capital, looting houses, killing people, maiming people. It's really unthinkable what's happening in Khartoum now. And elsewhere, of course, you know, in some cities in Darfur, the same kind of thing is happening. You know, the war now is being extended, you know, outside to Khartoum, to the fringes of the capital, to the Jazeera province, to the north of Khartoum, to the west of Khartoum. And I think the two sides want to go to the finish, you know. That seems to be there. They think, each and every one think that they can win this war. But we know they will only destroy the country, and no winner will clearly emerge from it. And continued chaos and lawlessness will prevail.
And let's talk about the latest information that we got today, that several prisons were attacked. And specifically the prison where former President Omar al-Bashir was and some of his close associates was also attacked.
And this speaks to the fact that the loyalists of Bashir are now out and about in the mix. What is the implication of this latest development?
The implication of this development is that they are going to continue fanning the fire, and they will do their best to contribute to this chaos and to further escalate the war. They made a statement, actually, and I'm sure probably that you have seen it, by Ahmed Haroun, who claims to represent them, saying that we are out here and we are going to rebel and the rebellion. We are going to resist the rebellion and, you know, finish this rebellion, meaning the RSF.
And give me some context about Ahmed Haroun. He was a former governor and he was indicted by ICC. Give me some context.
Yes, Ahmed Haroun was a former governor of North Kordofan, based in Lubaid at the time. And he is the one who made very controversial statements at the time about exterminating the rebels and killing them and all that. And he was very close to Bashir, and he's accused, of course, of having contributed to mass killings in Darfur and elsewhere. He was indicted by the ICC, and he's one of those, you know, on the list of the former president and others. And he was, arrested and detained in Kovar prison until yesterday.
And there are growing, there are reports of growing calls from people who are concerned, asking the international community to put pressure on the two parties to silence the guns and chart a way forward for negotiations or dialogue. Talk to me about your experience on this front.
Yes, there are calls, the last of which, of course, was the Security Council meeting yesterday. The calls from the Sudanese themselves, of course, and many other friends of Sudan, to put pressure on the two, belligerents. But, of course, what kind of pressure is going to be effective in these circumstances? Well, at least now we have... seemingly, we have a kind of a lull in the fighting for 3 days. A kind of a truce has been negotiated by the Americans and by some of the Sudanese civil society leaders. And we hope that is going to continue to hold. There is sporadic fighting, here and there. But in the main, it seems to be holding. Of course, what we are hoping is that this ceasefire is going to be consolidated, maintained and consolidated and extended to a further period of time. And then in the meantime, talks will start, not only between the two belligerents, but also involving the civilians, so as to see what course of action can be taken in order to resume the transition in Sudan.
And you were here representing the transitional government there on a civilian ticket. I mean, you came during former Prime Minister Hamdok's tenure in office. Now you're still here. What are you telling the U.S. government officials about the situation in Sudan, about what they should do, about how it can be de-escalated?
Well, I'm telling them exactly what I just said. I'm in touch with officials in the administration, and I'm talking to them about the situation. And the message that I'm passing is that we... the Sudanese are expecting the role of the U.S. as a leader of the international community to continue its pressure on the two belligerents in order to stop the war. That's the first priority. The second priority is to do everything possible in order to stabilize the situation and come to the rescue of the Sudanese people, because the humanitarian situation, as you know, is really catastrophic. It's really dire.
That's Nureddin Sati, former Sudanese ambassador to the United States. Sati served as Khartoum envoy in Washington from 2020 to 2022. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, several high-profile Sudanese prisoners escape from Kovar. Find out what that means for the country after this break. A Sudanese political analyst says the recent escape of former Sudanese officials allied to ousted President Omar al-Bashir from Kobar prison will add fuel to Sudan's ongoing conflict in the country. The escape was preceded by a series of prison breaks at Soba prison, Al-Hoda prison and Omdurman women's prison in Khartoum, where thousands of inmates were reportedly released. Footage of some of the escapee sparked outrage among Sudanese on social media. Osman Baldo says the prison escape has serious political and security implications for Sudan.
The most significant prison break that has occurred over the last few days is the escape of the leaders of the Islamist movement who were held in pre-trial detention or serving prison terms for different crimes. And this includes definitely the top barons and inner circle of power in the Islamist movement of Sudan, the local branch of the Muslim Brotherhood movement, and of the ruling National Congress Party under Omar al-Bashir rule over the 30 years that this regime lasted. These people are now out. They are making political statements, calling on loyalists of the party, of the Muslim Brotherhood, other people who are loyal to them, to join this battle between the two generals, between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces on the side of the army. Therefore, the significance of this call and the significance of these leaders and top commanders of the Islamist movement, which is itself militarized, in joining the fight on the side of the army, that this will prolong the conflict, will give it a very important political dimension. People suspected that the army was acting on behalf of the Islamist movement. The latest development revealed basically has made this even more credible as a claim, that the Islamists within the army have fought to push the Sudan Armed Forces into this confrontation with the forces created as a proxy, the Rapid Support Forces. The battle will be to the finish, I believe, and there will be no let up in the current killings that are occurring of civilians who are caught in the crossfire.
So basically, they will serve to fuel this violence further. And the most prominent among those escapees seems to be Ahmed Haroun, a close ally of Bashir, who is now making public statements like you alluded to. And he said he escaped Kobar because of a lack of basic necessities in the prison and because of ill treatment. And he further said he and his associates are fully capable of defending themselves in this current conflict in Sudan. What are the implications of these dangerous statements?
Of course, in advance of the prison break of these leaders from Kobar prison, the high security prison and the most known in Sudan, was preceded by the release or the escape of tens of thousands of prisoners from other jails, including Al-Huda in Omdurman, where this movement began. An unidentified armed group, suspected to be members of the former National Intelligence and Security Services, stormed the prison, released about three dozen of their former colleagues who were, in death row, having been condemned to death for their role in torturing a teacher to death in eastern Sudan, and then throwing the key to other prisoners and telling them to free themselves. When we saw after that, due to the harsh conditions of lack of food and water in particular in all of prisons across Sudan, that prisoners in Soba mutinied and broke out. This was the case also of Omdurman women prison, and the list went on and on. Kobar was the latest, but I believe all that preceded was a sort of an advanced play out that could cover the political significance of the escape of the leaders of the Islamist movement. As I said, their escape and their being out to direct the involvement and the participation of members of the Islamist movement in the battle that is now raging across Sudan would only add to the complications of this crisis and increase the destruction and death resulting from it among civilians.
That's Suleiman Boldo, the director at the think tank Sudan Transparency and Policy Tracker. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the U.S. state of New Jersey earlier today. A group of South Sudanese in the capital, Juba, who call themselves concerned citizens, are asking the residents of Juba town and other cities across the country to contribute money for facilitating the evacuation of South Sudanese nationals stranded in Sudan's capital, Khartoum, following last week's outbreak of fighting. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has the story from Bor.
A leader of the group's organizing committee, Akwaj Akwi Maniam, says thousands of South Sudanese remain in a desperate situation in Khartoum since the conflict erupted in Khartoum 10 days ago. Maniam calls on residents of Juba and other parts of the country to donate cash to facilitate the evacuation of the South Sudanese nationals in Sudan who are unable to pay bus fares or plane tickets. He says South Sudanese who are stuck in Sudan are living under difficult conditions.
Since the war began in Khartoum, there have not been any effort that we have seen other group or community are doing. People have been supporting their own families at the individual level, but there are those who are stranded who don't have support from any family. So we decide to come up and organize our team to do a fundraising as a way to respond to the need of our people in Khartoum.
Akwe says his group has so far raised $5,000 and more than 400,000 South Sudanese pounds. He says the group has put the donations collected so far into a good use.
Now, already we are using this money to pay the truck, especially the owner of the truck, so that they get the people to come to run. There are individuals who went for medical attention, there are those who went for education and a business purposes also. They are all trapped in the situation. You have even seen the fuel only. One barrel of fuel is $1,500. And a bottle of water currently, as I'm speaking to you, is more than $2. To get, for our citizen there to get the food is very difficult. So the suffering is really very big.
Last week, South Sudan's acting Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, Deng Dao-Ding, told South Sudan in Focus that it was difficult to evacuate South Sudanese nationals stranded in Khartoum while the fighting was ongoing. Atim Deng, a South Sudanese national who arrived in Juba a few days ago, says that decisions by South Sudan authorities puts the lives of South Sudanese in Khartoum in danger.
The government can approach the warring parties to give them some time so that they can really evacuate the citizens of South Sudan by buses, and they can just escort them through the border of Jordan. I think that can be safe for the last. Seeing the airport is no longer in operation so far. If our government can really try, because this will cost the life of South Sudanese simply because they have nowhere to go.
Pauline Adong Malok, a spokesperson of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, says the South Sudan government is preparing to send vehicles to pick South Sudanese nationals who have crossed into the country.
For now, given the situation in Sudan, in Khartoum particularly, because this is where most of South Sudanese live, we still need to find out how possible that can be, because at the moment there's a calling for ceasefire for 72 hours. So if it is safe in Khartoum, the government will decide what to do. But at the moment, the focus is for those who have already come to the border side. As those in Khartoum, this will be determined by the situation.
For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
And that report by Dengai Deng in Bor brings us to the end of this show for Wednesday. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Don't forget to visit VOA Africa for all your favorite programs and updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voa.com.